Welcome to the Low Mileage Tour on the 435 Voices podcast. I'm Bill Crabe, and during the rest of this spring and summer, then into the fall, I hope to be able to share the experience I had 29 years ago in 1991. In that baseball season, my friend Sue Esler and I visited all 178 professional baseball parks across the U.S. and Canada. You'll find some video footage from that trip by searching for Low Mileage Tour on YouTube. But here on the podcast, I'm hoping to visit with people that remember the ballparks in a way that we, as baseball nomads, never could. Thanks for listening to the Low Mileage Tour on the 435 Voices podcast. Today on the Low Mileage Tour, we're actually making three stops. I've just posted videos from St. Lucie and Vero Beach. On a Sunday afternoon, May 19th, 1991, Sue and I went to the first of 17 what we called double days, days in which the schedule required us to see two parks in the same day. We saw the St. Lucie Mets in an afternoon game that day, and then the Vero Beach Dodgers that evening. Our podcast and final video of the day, though, is focused on the stop we made the following Saturday. May 25th of 1991 was the 47th day of Bill and Sue's excellent adventure, and that night, in West Palm Beach, we visited ballpark number 50. Municipal Stadium in West Palm was torn down in 2002, but the house was rocking that night we visited, and today on the Low Mileage Tour on 435 Voices, we're visiting with one of the people primarily responsible for that. Rob Rabenecker was the general manager of the Palm Beach Expos and ran the spring training operations for the Montreal Expos for many years at both the team's park in West Palm and later after the team had moved to Jupiter, Florida. Today, Rob runs a few Chick-fil-A restaurants in South Florida, and here is my conversation with Rob. All right, welcome. We are visiting today with Rob Rabenecker. When I visited the West Palm Beach Expos in May of 1991, May 25th, in fact, Rob was the general manager of the team and also ran the Florida State League facility there. Rob, thanks so much for joining me today, and maybe tell us a little bit about what you're doing these days and what you were doing then with the West Palm Beach Expos.
Thanks, Bill. Thank you for having me on today. 1989, I was invited down by the Expos to oversee their minor league club. They had just purchased this minor league club from a local owner and Bob Sauer's family. And I was invited down to oversee the operation of that club. And so 1991, I was overseeing the minor league West Palm Expos as well as overseeing the business operations for Montreal spring training. And fast forward to today and in between that time and today, you know, I was involved with the Braves spring training as well. When we did a joint venture down there before we closed down that stadium, we moved up to Jupiter with the Expos and the Cardinals replacing the Braves in that partnership and overseeing a new stadium up in Jupiter, Roger Dean Stadium. And then eventually the Marlins took the Expos place. And then fast forward a little bit more to at that point to 2007, I wasn't having fun at the point going to the ballpark every day. I still love the game of baseball, and I kind of looked outside a little bit and was had an opportunity to land with Chick-fil-A, and that's what I've been doing for the last 12 years, running Chick-fil-A stores. I got two franchises in South Florida out here in Royal Palm and Wellington, and I've got a mall store and a freestander, and still love baseball, but doing the Chick-fil-A thing at the same time.
Terrific. Well, I told my wife that you were running a series of Chick-fil-A restaurants, and I think she was more excited about that than she was about baseball. She's a big Chick-fil-A chicken sandwich fan, so that was a high praise in our house.
That's good, good.
Rob, as I think back to that stadium, I was watching the videotape earlier this morning, and we'll release that video on the same day that we do this podcast, which will be on Monday, Memorial Day. And it was a unique park in a bunch of different ways. One is I recall this sort of overhang that looked sort of like a shell. Was it meant to look like a shell, do you think?
It was some covering. It was modeled after the Yankees had a similar facility down in Fort Lauderdale that they their spring training home before they moved over to Tampa. And it was modeled after that one. I believe that one was built in 1962. And the one that we had was built in 1963. And it was heavy, heavy duty concrete. But yeah, it was modeled after that one down there.
It didn't occur to me. We said it on the videotape, and it didn't occur to me much at the time. But as I think back in retrospect, it was certainly true. That stadium, Municipal Stadium, was different than most of the other spring training homes that we saw. So at the time in 1991, I think there were 12, maybe 14, I think, actually, Florida State League teams, all of which obviously were affiliated with major league franchises. And I think all of them, with the exception of maybe the Miami Miracle, had spring training actually at their same stadiums. And so they were big ballparks, mostly, frankly, empty in the Florida State League summer season, or fairly empty. And yet West Palm had kind of a character and a feel to it that seemed different than elsewhere. Did it seem that way to you? I don't know how much you got to go to other stadiums, but what are your recollections along those lines?
I love that stadium. I remember the first day I took the job with the Expo sight unseen. I was supposed to originally go to Jamestown, New York, and then they called me at the last minute and said, hey, we've got this opening in West Palm. Would you be interested in that? And West Palm versus Jamestown. I said, sure. West Palm Beach. So I jumped on that, came down, and when it was a Sunday, I remember arriving in West Palm on a Sunday and going to the stadium and actually jumping the fence and going out there and saying, wow, this is unbelievable. I was coming from Louisville, where I worked with the ball club there, the Louisville Redbirds at the time, and a big, massive stadium there. I think it was 30,000 seats. Coming down here to this place where, we had – I think we had a total 5,500 seats, and then we'd add another couple thousand bleachers during spring training. But it was awesome. The configuration, I mean, just a neat feel about it. I mean, you're coming down, it was January of 1989, and it winter throughout the whole country, and I'm coming down to sunny South Florida that I'd never been to before, and I just felt like I was in heaven. And then going to the ballpark and coming to the ballpark that Monday when it was finally open, getting go up into the press box and go just looking out, and you saw the Clear Lake. I think Clear Lake was the name of it. It was a water reservoir for the city of West Palm, and then beyond that was the skyline of West Palm, and beyond that you could see a little bit of the ocean. It was just a magnificent view and a magnificent place to come to work every day.
I remember that view. We were the press box is pretty high up at that old stadium, or was. And so you could see quite a ways out into the surrounding area, which, of course, for somebody that's visiting for only a few hours, was always great for us, because to be able to see a little bit of the area that we are around. The other thing that struck me about the park itself was the West Palm thing was true to its name. There were palm trees everywhere, as I recall. And maybe that's true overall in your area there now. But we were impressed as Northeasterners, I suppose, by just how many palm trees there were, and also by how much, how many other gardens and landscaping and that sort of thing. Was that something that you noted, that you took, that you tried to do on purpose, or is it just sort of come with the territory in South Florida?
I think that's one of the first things I noted coming down here. I felt like made me feel like I was in heaven, I guess, because everything was so green, and the stadium sat on the corner of Palm Beach Lakes Boulevard and Hank Aaron Drive. And so you had all of the palm trees that lined Palm Beach Lakes Boulevard. And then just across the way was the town of Palm Beach and Palm Beach, the palm trees throughout there and just everywhere. I mean, now your memory's correct. I mean, there's palm trees all over the place. And again, that's the name West Palm Beach, but just a great, I mean, everything, it's green down here all year long. And especially during that time of year, it's just a special place. But that going back to your first question, I mean, going around to the rest of the ballparks in the Florida State League and the spring trainings, none of them had the view that we had down there. And the stadium was even configured. It's backwards in terms of how a normal stadium would be configured in order to have that view, because I guess the normal configuration of a ball field, the batter is looking into the sun when typically around 7 o'clock when we had those summer games. So the normal configuration would have been opposite that you saw, but because of the wanting to capture that view and have that, they built it in 63 with that configuration, and spring training was going to be the primary use at that time. So they really didn't care when the sun was setting in the evening times.
It's interesting that you mentioned that. At one of our other favorite stadiums, in fact, the place that we ended up after we finished that trip was in Bend, Oregon. I played at a little ballpark called Vince Genna Stadium. And similarly, the sun set over the western, over the center field fence, because the Cascade Mountains were out there and they wanted people to be able to look at them. It's it was very uncommon to see stadiums that were sort of turned around that way. And it may be, you probably know more than I, that Major League Baseball at one point said, okay, we can't have stadiums that are sort of configured this way anymore for the players' benefit. But from a fan's standpoint, it was certainly nice to be able to look out that way.
It was great place to watch a ball game, a great place to hang out. And anyway, I still look fondly upon those memories of just being up in that press box. And we'd climb up on that roof every once in a while. There was a hatch that would allow you to get up there, and a handful of us would go up there and sneak up there every once in a while.
Oh, that's interesting. Tell me about the affiliation with the Expos, Rob. I mean, so as running sort of general, not only the general management of the team, but the spring training operation for a large contingent that was coming from Canada. Was there anything unique about that? What was that that working relationship with Montreal like?
It was, I had the best of both worlds. I loved minor league baseball, and my background was in minor league baseball, and I got to work in minor league baseball, but I got to do it for a major league club working as an employee of the major league club. So you got a taste of spring training and the big league feel of what being around a major league club's all about during that month of February and March. And that was just a great experience. And then April would kick off, and we'd dive into the nuts and bolts and the mom and pop and the fun of minor league baseball. I mean, you know, we had Max Patkin and Captain Dynamite and the famous chicken and all the other crazy stuff that goes along with minor league baseball down there. You probably wouldn't have experienced had you been up in Montreal. And at the same time, when Montreal made a run for the it was 94, just before the strike, when they were making a run for the playoffs and had the best record in baseball, the excitement that goes along with that was kind of filtered down to us, because we were excited because we were going to get a chance to partake in that. So it was the best of both worlds, working for a major league organization actually running their minor league club.
Terrific. We're going to take a short break, and I will be back with Rob Ravenecker right after this. Welcome back. I am visiting with Rob Ravenecker, formerly Vice President and General Manager of the West Palm Beach Expos. And we're talking about Municipal Stadium in West Palm. It is municipal, not Memorial, right?
Municipal Stadium. West Palm Beach Municipal Stadium, yes.
Yeah, that's right. And our stop on May 25th of 1991, West Palm Beach Expos were playing and beat the Dunedin Blue Jays that night. So it was Canada's two minor league affiliates that were playing the night that we were there. And actually, we threw out the first pitch at that game, Rob. So that was nice of you to invite us to do that. I think it was maybe the second or third time we did it in the Florida State League, and overall many times during the course of that season. Let's talk about some of the players that maybe you saw pass through. The Expos were not long for the world after the 1991 trip. They went on, I think, a few more years, but you must have seen some great players pass through the West Palm Beach over that time.
I mean, my first year down there, we were supposed to have Larry Walker, Delino DeShields, and that group, and they end up skipping West Palm and going straight to Jacksonville. But it wasn't soon thereafter that Rondell White came through, Cliff Floyd came through. Fast forward, I want to say 92, 93, we had Vladimir Guerrero. So we had some great guys, I think, but at the top of the list was my manager in 1989. And, I think he was there in 91 when you were there. It was, Felipe Alou. And just the opportunity to go into the manager's office after every game and just hear this man talk about baseball and talk about the, what took place in that night's game and just the education that you were getting, just a chance to sit in there and have a debrief with him. I mean, he just hear him talk about the game and talk about the game of baseball and the application of that particular night. It was just, that was a great, great opportunity and just a great, great thing. But we had, I mean, the players, FP Santangelo coming out of the University of Miami and weighing all of $140, $150, and then going on, he had a nice little big league career. We had a number of guys that came through there, but I got to think, I mean, Felipe would be at the top of my list, even though he wasn't playing at the time, was the opportunity to see and watch and experience him on a day in and day out basis.
As you think back to the Florida State League, I'd like to talk just briefly about this. This will be the first podcast we do in a series of going through the Florida State League pretty quickly, unfortunately. I'm a little behind schedule on our low mileage tour. And also many times in the Florida State League, we actually went to two ballparks in the same day. West Palm, again, maybe it was the night that we were there. Maybe it was something that was unique to the stadium, had a much bigger crowd than most. You know, the folks in Baseball City were awfully nice to us. The Baseball City Booster Club gave us, raised money for us and gave us, I think, $250 to keep going on the trip. And they took up a collection in the stands at Lakeland. But if you were to combine the overall attendance in those two parks, you'd probably be somewhere south of 500 people. Was that, did you talk to other general managers in the FSL about kind of what that was like? Any stories about kind of how it worked to be a general manager of a team that was unlike most minor league teams? You know, most minor league teams basically are driven by attendance. In spring training homes, it was somewhat different, perhaps.
I think the Florida State League has always gotten a bad rap for being a lower attendance league when you look at minor league baseball across the country. But what people don't realize is that we're selling baseball during the worst weather time of the year. People are looking to get out when you're up north, to get out in the spring and summer and hang outside. I mean, it, down here in the South Florida area, and in Florida in particular, it's the worst time of the year to be outside with the heat and the humidity and everything like that. So we always were fighting against that. But I think some of the best promotions came out of the Florida State League. The guy that used to own the ball club before Montreal bought it was a guy named Bob Sowers, who the promotional trophy was named after him, and the League Executive of the Year Award was named the Sowers Trophy. But Bob came down from – he was the worked on Wall Street with the an ad agency up on Wall Street, and he was responsible for the Pillsbury Doughboy, and that was one of his claims of fame. But he came down and said, why can't we market this a little differently? And he was one of the original innovators. But there was a guy named Fred Whitaker who went on the Colorado Sky Sox and was – he did, you know, crazy stuff in West Palm Beach as well with the pony, you know, giving away a pony and doing all kinds of crazy things, and just going above and beyond, because we had to, short of a human sacrifice, we had to do crazy stuff just to get people in the ballpark. But it was fun. It was, you know, challenging. You came out, you got it. I mean, we weren't unlike any other GM across the country with a minor league ballpark. I mean, we took pride in our attendance, and we were sensitive when we didn't have people in the stands. So we worked a little bit harder, and I think we worked a little bit harder just to try to make it work down here. And so, but it was fun. I mean, we learned off each other, and that was a great thing about minor league baseball. We learned off each other in the Florida State League, but we'd also learn off from each other when we get together in the fall at the El Paso baseball seminar, the promotional seminar, and just share ideas on what's working in Bend, Oregon, or what's working in West Palm Beach, Florida, or what's working in the Carolina League. And that was the beauty of minor league baseball.
Well, so I have to ask then, as I was watching the video, I came across one of our favorite mascots from the 1991 trip, which was Willie P. Bananas. Was that your invention, or did he precede you?
No. We in 1989, when we started the club, the Expo said, let's come up with a mascot. We had a mascot designed with the Expo uniform and the red, white, and blue hat, but we had a name the mascot contest. And we end up sending out this, we had a local TV station that got involved, and we sent out across county a color of the mascot contest, a cartoon character of the mascot, and named the mascot contest. So we thought we'd get a couple hundred. We got thousands of entries and thousands of these forms returned to us. And one of them stood out, and it was this young girl, and I don't recall her name, but she said, what about Willie P. Bananas, WPB, West Palm Beach, Willie P. Bananas. And we thought, wow, this is perfect. And that's how Willie P. Bananas was born. The girl that ended up becoming our first mascot, we had a contest, and this one person came in, and I said, why do you want to be a mascot? And she goes, my grandfather once said, pick three things that you want to do in life and set those as a goal. And she said, I want to ride in a horse-drawn carriage in New York. I want to get a graduate degree from the University of Florida, and I want to be a mascot. And I'm thinking, wow, this is great. And I didn't let her know that she was the only one that really had applied. And she turned out to be tremendous. Marianne Carlisle at the time was her name. And she went on to become she did some acting and did some other stuff. But she was tremendous. I mean, it all kind of came together. I mean, we had the name, the orange gorilla look. And it was a great, great mascot. We had the Marianne in that mascot outfit, and the crowd loved her, and it just kind of took off from there, and it was fun. We had a lot of fun with it.
Well, and folks, if you get a chance to watch the video, which will begin coming out the same day as the podcast, please do watch for Willie P. Bananas. The night that we were there, Willie, just like the famous chicken, would change outfits a few times during the course of the performances over the night. And much more than a mascot, a true entertainer. So Willie was fantastic and was a big highlight for us. And by the way, Rob, you were certainly not overstating the heat. The day we were there, which again, still was in May, it was 95 degrees. And 115% humidity. So it was hard to get people, I'm sure, to come out. And that poor woman must have been very hot in that Willie P. Bananas costume, I guess.
Mary Ann was a trooper. She did a great job. And yeah.
Fantastic outfit. Well, Rob Rabenecker, thank you so much for spending some time with me. It's been great to walk down memory lane. I guess the last question I'll ask is, I know you moved to Roger Dean Stadium, and I went there in 2003 and saw both teams that play there then. What was that stadium like, and what's going on in West Palm for baseball these days?
Roger Dean Stadium opened up in 98. We closed down West Palm in 97, and the West Palm Beach Expos, we put them to bed, and they became the Jupiter Hammerheads. Willie P. Bananas, we had a little ceremony. Willie P. Bananas moved to Hawaii, and the Jupiter Hammerhead mascot, Hamilton the Hammerhead came about. We opened up in 98 with the Montreal Expos and the St. Louis Cardinals sharing the complex. And then in 2003, I believe was the date that the Cardinals didn't have a minor league club at the time. It was just the Marlins are at the time the Expos and the Hammerheads, and the Cardinals purchased the old Port Charlotte franchise and moved them over, and we ended up being the only complex in America beginning in 2003, I believe it was, that had two minor league clubs playing out of it simultaneously. So we went from two spring training clubs and one minor league club to two spring training clubs and two minor league clubs with 140 games there. So had quite a bit of baseball, not to mention the other complex baseball tournaments and stuff that we had on those backfields. So we had quite a bit going on once we moved up north.
Well, it's not surprising that you decided to move on. You had seen enough baseball for a lifetime, right in a 3 or 4 year stretch, probably, at Roger Dean Stadium. So
it was fun. It was fun. We enjoyed what we did.
Well, Rob, thanks again. Thanks for visiting with me today. Best of continued success with the Chick-fil-A franchise. If I find my way back in South Florida, I'm going to come look you up in West Palm Beach.
We'd look forward to it. I'm out here in Wellington and Royal Palm, and stop by, Bill, and we'll let you cook your own sandwich. So.
I love that. That sounds good. Rob Rabenecker, thanks again.
My pleasure, Bill. Eat more chicken.
It is a busy week on the Low Mileage Tour as we try to make up some of the time lost at the beginning of the season. I do plan to get to the other stops, those before mid-May, however, at the end of the year. This week, though, we'll sync up with the actual schedule of 1991. Tomorrow, May 27th, we'll visit the park that we saw 29 years ago to the day, Chain of Lakes Park in Winter Haven, Florida, for many years the spring home of the Boston Red Sox. See you then.